The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And welcome to a Thursday, everyone. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com at 3 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon through the magic of digital audio recordings on the Progressive Voices Network at 6 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday through Friday evenings. A lot of breaking news going on today, so as we tend to do occasionally, we'll do our What's News Live. Before I even get to that, something that just happened a little while ago, news coverage cut out over to Miami, where a pedestrian walk bridge has collapsed. Now, we expect those kind of things to happen because our infrastructure is crumbling here in the United States. The thing that makes this one so weird is it was a brand new pedestrian bridge. It had only been open a number of days. And the thing collapsed. So there are cars and people trapped and obviously people killed. And this was just built. So I don't know what the answer to that one is. No, I don't. Other news, we kind of got cut off yesterday after I hit the wrong element. Talking about all the transitions going on inside the White House. And today we might know why there's more chaos than usual. And to say there's more chaos than usual in the White House is kind of redundant because there's always tons of chaos there. But all the turnover in positions and people exiting, and I think Mr. Dump is a little unnerved, perhaps, by our top news story. So I'll tell you what, we'll go right into What's News and see how far it takes us, okay?
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So here's the breaking news. This just came to light in the last hour or so. The New York Times is reporting that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, has subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over documents, including those related to Russia, according to two people briefed on the matter. The order is the first known time that the special counsel demanded documents directly related to Trump's businesses, bringing the investigation closer to the president. So maybe that's made him even crazier than usual. I don't know, but paranoia does strange things to strange people. Even not so strange people. More than a month after the congressional deadline, the Trump administration imposed sanctions on a series of Russian organizations and individuals today in retaliation for interference in the 2016 presidential elections and other malicious cyber attacks. Whoa, it's about time, huh? It was the most significant action taken against Moscow since Trump took office. The sanctions came at the same time the Trump administration joined a collective statement with Great Britain, France, and Germany today, denouncing Russia for its apparent role in a nerve gas attack on a former Russian spy and his daughter on British soil. They called it a clear violation of international law, but the statement included no joint action in response. But at least, two instances of toughness against Russia in one day. That's unprecedented in this administration. Some bad news for those of us who remember very vividly the financial disaster of a decade or so ago. The U.S. Senate yesterday passed the biggest loosening of financial regulations since the economic crisis. The bill, which passed 67 to 31, yeah, remember those numbers, would free more than two dozen banks from the toughest regulatory scrutiny put in place after the 2008 global financial crisis. The bill now moves to the House. The House already passed, I believe, an even tougher version of it, so they need to come to terms on something, which will only serve to weaken our protections and make us vulnerable to another meltdown as we just are finally getting over. Unbelievable. In a story that I got to touch on yesterday, didn't get too far into it, Donald Trump has selected CNBC host Larry Kudlow to replace Gary Cohn as his chief economic advisor. Much like Cohn, Kudlow is an outspoken advocate in favor of free market economic policies and against policies like the steel tariffs Trump announced last week. But as you'll hear, you can hear why Trump probably tapped this guy.
Well, look, he called me Sunday afternoon, and I thought he was going to call me to bowl me out because I had some problems with the across-the-board tariffs, as you know. But he didn't, actually. He called and started explaining his position to me, his thinking on the matter. And then we got into the conversation, and he started talking about the NAC director job. And that's when I realized that was what this was really going to be about. And he was wonderful. I mean, I've been around a while. My head is not turned easily.
Right.
I served in the White House, et cetera, et cetera. Oy. But just to talk to him for 30, 40 minutes at a clip, 3-4 days in a row, is a wonderful thing. I just want to say that. It's a wonderful thing. And he and I have known each other many years. I've interviewed him on radio and TV. I was in the campaign helping out. I know him, reasonably well. And it was just a terrific experience. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sound sophomoric, but it was just a really good thing. By the way, it was out.
You are
sophomoric. I didn't know that. I was watching TV this morning, and the president called, and he said, it's out, because I don't think he was intending to put it out till tomorrow, Friday. And I said, oh. And he said, you're on the air. And he said, I'm looking at a picture of you. And he said, very handsome. So Trumpian.
So Trumpian. This is all these people care about. All Trump cares about is how is it going to play on television, because he is a television personality. That's what he is. And so is Larry Kudlow. Not an economist, no degree in economics, no nothing. He's a TV and radio personality. This is really bad. Who has not been right about anything, we should point out. As students at thousands of schools across the country walked out of classes on Wednesday in solidarity with Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, some television stations joined in too. Viacom's MTV, BET, Nickelodeon, and Comedy Central all suspended regular programming for 17 minutes, beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern, to show solidarity with the school walkout.
I walk for the 17 that lost their life. I walk for the families that lost the loved ones in the shooting.
We don't want what happened at Parkland to ever happen to any of us.
I'm walking out to let Congress know that I will be voting in 2020 and that I have a say in this issue.
We don't want to see any more massacres. We don't want any other community to have to go through what we have gone through in Columbine in the past and what we still go through now.
I just hope this movement comes out and that we represent those students that have lost their lives, not only in Parkland, but at Sandy Hook and Columbine as well. I just pray that we bond together.
Viacom also plans on providing digital and on-air coverage during the March for Our Lives rally in Washington, D.C. on March 24th. And Vice Chairwoman of Viacom, Sherry Redstone, will also donate $500,000 to the march. Toys R Us will close all of its U.S. stores and has told employees it plans to liquidate all operations as part of an orderly wind-down process. So no more Toys R Us kids. Sorry. In the wake of Rex Tillerson's firing, Trump has said he will nominate current CIA Director Mike Pompeo to be the next Secretary of State and Gina Haspel as CIA Director. Senator Rand Paul said he'll oppose both of them, citing Pompeo's support for the Iraq War.
With regard to the nomination of Gina Haspel, I am troubled by her participation in the Black Ops site in Thailand. And particularly troubling, I think, is this quote from her time there and from the time when the torture was actually occurring. The quote from one of the interrogators says that Gina Haspel said, "Good job. I like the way you're drooling." This is about Zubaydah, who, as he was being waterboarded. "It adds to the realism. I'm almost buying it. You wouldn't think a grown man would do that." When you read that, sort of the joyful glee at someone who's being tortured, I find it just amazing that anyone would consider having this woman at the head of the CIA. And so my opposition to her is over her direct participation in interrogation and her gleeful enjoyment at the suffering of someone being tortured. So my announcement today is that I will oppose both Pompeo's nomination and Haspel's nomination.
All right. Rand Paul saying he'll oppose both of them. Hopefully some Democrats will stand with him on that. More breaking news. In a fundraising speech yesterday in Missouri, Donald Trump boasted that he insisted to Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, that the United States runs a trade deficit with our neighbor to the north without knowing whether or not that was truly the case. In audio obtained by the Washington Post and other media outlets, Trump said he contradicted Trudeau by insisting that the United States has a trade deficit. But Trump said, "I didn't even know. I had no idea." Listen, the audio is not the clearest. It's some of the, you know, it was a private fundraiser that somebody leaked the audio out of. So, but it's worth listening to.
Trudeau came to see me. He's a good guy, Justin. He said, no, we have no trade deficit with you. We have none. Donald, please, nice guy, good looking guy, comes in. Donald, we have no trade deficit. He's very proud because everybody else, you know, we're getting killed with them. So he's from. I said, wrong, Justin, you do. I didn't even know. Josh, I had no idea. I just said you're wrong. You know why? Because we're so stupid.
And they're laughing.
And I thought they were smart. I said, you're wrong, Justin. He said, no, we have no trade. I said, well, in that case, I feel differently. I said, but I don't believe it. I sent one of our guys out. His guy, my guy, they went out. I said, check, because I can't believe it. Well, sir, you're actually right. We have no deficit, but that doesn't include energy and timber. I can't, you don't have a timber company. And when you do, we lose $17 billion a year. It's incredible.
Now, the Office of the United States Trade Representative says the United States has a trade surplus with Canada, which is actually true. I don't know. But then again, I'm not president of the United States. Former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe was set to officially retire this Sunday, March 18th. But according to sources, he could be fired any time now, just days before, and lose his pension after more than two decades at the Bureau. CNN has that story.
After a 22-year career at the Bureau, we have now learned that former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe could be fired in just days. He is set to officially retire on March 18th, this coming Sunday. He stepped down abruptly in January, and now we've learned that the Office of Professional Responsibility at the FBI has recommended his termination to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Now, Jeff Sessions has not made a determination. In fact, the spokesman, Sarah Flores, has said the department follows a prescribed process by which an employee may be terminated. That process includes recommendations from career employees, and no termination decision is final until the conclusion of that process. We have no personnel announcement at this time. Now, Wolf, this entire situation stems from an internal forthcoming report from the Inspector General's office, that internal watchdog at DOJ. And that report will claim that McCabe misled investigators about his role in approving other FBI officials to talk to the media back in 2016 about an ongoing investigation of the Clinton Foundation. Now, McCabe did not have any comment about this most recent development, Wolf, but You can be sure we will find out more as we see that report. It has not been released yet, that Inspector General's report, and is expecting to be wide-ranging and cover a multitude of issues stemming from the 2016 presidential election, including then-FBI Director Comey's decision to come out just days before the election, announcing a decision on the Hillary Clinton email probe.
So McCabe is waiting to find out if he's going to be fired before his official retirement date of Sunday, where he should be allowed to collect a pension after 22 years working at the FBI. This is real retribution. In fact, oh man, I don't have the story up. Another story broke. Let me see if I can't find it real fast, and I'm sure I can't. Oh, okay. Well, here, I guess the White House, lying session's going on. The press secretary calls former FBI number two Andrew McCabe a, quote, bad actor with, quote, well-documented history of troubling behavior. Lovely. And she won't say if he should be fired, said it's up to the Department of Justice. I'm looking at Twitter right now, looking for this story that I can't find. Man. I thought I was so organized for today, too. And nope. Here's one from Daniel Dale. Sarah Sanders calmly repeats Trump's completely fabricated claim on the trade balance with Canada, saying that the surplus data from the Office of Trade Representation, Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, is not taking into account some of the additional things like energy and timber. Okay. All right, I can't find that story. But there's more, where State Department officials are being forced out, where there's an investigation into career State Department employees and those that are deemed not sufficiently loyal enough to Donald Trump have been forced out. These are people who've been in the State Department, worked in jobs through numerous administrations of both parties. But if they're deemed not sufficiently loyal enough to Donald Trump, they're being outed and either made to leave or being fired. There's bad stuff going on here. And it's only going to get worse. Sorry, that's my editorial comment there. All right, a story I started telling you about yesterday, and I'm going to play this. It's a kind of a lengthy piece, but it is Rachel Maddow on the recent exodus. What's the plural of exodus? From the White House, from a bunch of people, but dealing with Tillerson and others who've exited in recent days.
We had to add Hope Hicks when she resigned as communications director. We had to add Josh Rafel when he resigned as deputy communications director, the one who worked for Jared and Ivanka. Then we had Jared and Ivanka's other friend, the guy who Trump had put in charge of the Office of American Innovation, that guy Reed Cordish, he was out too in the last couple of weeks. Then we had to add the number two official at the Homeland Security Department, Elaine Duke. Then we had to add the top official in the whole U.S. government on North Korea policy.
Yeah.
His last day in the administration after 30 years working on this issue was the Friday before Trump announced, surprise, he's going to meet with the dictator of North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who needs a specialist on North Korea policy anymore? Then we had the ambassador to Mexico also announced that she was leaving, another 30 plus years in the Foreign Service. She was not invited to the meetings that Jared Kushner took when he went to Mexico last week. And then we had Gary Cohn, the White House chief economic advisor, also leaving as well. So we've had to develop this whole new system of trying to keep this list all in one place. Now tonight we've got to squeeze things even a little bit more, because now we've got to add in, drum roll, please, the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who apparently came back early from a trip to Africa, either because he was tired and not feeling great, or to make sure he'd be in U.S. airspace by the time he
Number
saw
two.
The president's tweet
yeah.
firing him.
Mm-hmm.
One of those two, depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
Johnny McEntee is personal assistant to the president. Until last night, for some reason, he was hustled out of the White House. The Wall Street Journal was first to break the news that Mr. McEntee was out, and in dramatic fashion. Quote, President Donald Trump's personal assistant, John McEntee, was fired and escorted from the White House on Monday. Mr. McEntee had been a constant presence at Mr. Trump's side for the past 3 years. He made sure Mr. Trump had markers to sign autographs, delivered messages to him in the White House residence, and over the weekend ensured that the clocks in the White House residence were adjusted for daylight savings time. Then suddenly, poof, gone. Quote, Mr. McEntee was removed from the White House grounds Monday afternoon without being allowed to collect his belongings. He left without his jacket,
amazing,
according to a White House official. What came up so suddenly that on Saturday night he's changing the White House residence clocks for daylight savings time, and as for today, he had been booked on board the president's flight to California, but then something came up that fast, and yesterday afternoon they ran him out of the White House without even letting him get his jacket. Now, again, Wall Street Journal was first on this story. What they're reporting is that Mr. McEntee was denied a security clearance over financial problems in his background. People close to Mr. McEntee said the problems related to online gambling and mishandling of his taxes. Those problems prevented him from gaining the clearance necessary for his job. According to one law enforcement official, the Secret Service is now investigating Mr. McEntee for these issues. So today, we have added the Secretary of State, the Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy, the NASA Administrator, the head of the Forest Service, and the President's personal assistant.
But one more item about that John McEntee firing. He was fired. He was escorted out of the White House. He was not even allowed to get his jacket. And apparently, by all reports, it was quite cold in Washington, D.C. Monday night. But shortly after his firing, like within a matter of an hour or two, McEntee was hired by Trump's reelection campaign as a senior advisor. Even though he was denied a security clearance, there were financial problems in his background, problems related to online gambling and mishandling of his taxes. Something is fishy there. So after Rachel Maddow did that story, then we got news of Larry Kudlow of CNBC, you can't make this stuff up, being tapped to replace Gary Cohn.
He is someone, he's very different than Gary Cohn. He is, however, a free trader, but he's someone who the president has a good personal relationship with, was often even in the president's ear, talking on the phone with him throughout this administration, and someone who the president, you know, saw on TV a lot and liked. And so this is a president we're seeing right now who is sort of remaking his West Wing and in his White House in his own image and sort of getting rid of people who didn't quite work, although that's not necessarily the exact case with Gary Cohn departing. But it was time for Gary to leave, and he's bringing in people he feels comfortable with, and Larry Kudlow is one of them.
And one question might be if this could presage some change on the tariff decision, since he was against it initially, was in favor of the carve-outs. So perhaps you'll see more carve-outs, including perhaps the European Union.
Yeah, it's a good question. What we've seen, though, on every issue is two things are sort of both true. One is that the president is often quite impressionable or can be persuaded by the last person he talked to or someone who he's seen frequently or someone who he's chatting with late at night. Though I do have to add that on the other hand, at least on a few core issues, and one of them is sort of trade and tariffs would fall into that bucket. Of course, immigration is another. But on a few key issues, the president's gut has never wavered for decades. And so no matter how much he's maneuvered or staved off from making a decision, he often realigns right where his gut was for a long time or somewhere close to there, at least.
So there's the story on Larry Kudlow, who is the new chief economic advisor to the president. This is opposite world. It truly is. Now, of course, when we learned that Tillerson was out, and that Trump would nominate Mike Pompeo to move over from his role as the head of the CIA to be Secretary of State, you got to wonder about Mike Pompeo. On paper, he looks good. He graduated at the head of his class from West Point. He graduated from Harvard Law School, three-term congressman. But the problem is he was a teabagger. And so, you know, you got to figure he's got to at least have some kind of brains to graduate from Harvard Law School and be ahead of his class at West Point. But he is a bit of a warmonger. He was in favor of invading Iraq. He is apparently very bullish on going to war with Iran. He's not a fan of the Iran nuclear deal. He knows nothing about diplomacy. He knows about waging war. And that's not what we want in a Secretary of State. At least we know Rand Paul is going to oppose him. But the name we weren't sure about was Gina Haspel. Ali Velshi on MSNBC did a little segment, Who is Gina Haspel? And the more we can learn about this woman, the better before her confirmation hearing.
President Trump has nominated Gina Haspel as the next CIA director. And if confirmed, she'd be the first woman ever to lead the agency. Who is Gina Haspel? Well, Haspel tells the Washington Post that she spent 30 years as an officer with the CIA. She currently serves as deputy director. She was selected for the job last February. Now, according to the New York Times, she has spent much of her time undercover, but later in her career, Haspel was heavily involved in the CIA's controversial torture program. In 2002, she ran a secret CIA prison for suspected terrorists in Thailand that used harsh interrogation tactics, including waterboarding, sleep deprivation, even squeezing detainees into coffins. Now, the Times says Haspel oversaw the brutal questioning of two detainees. One was tortured so badly at one point, he appeared to be dead. He was waterboarded 83 times in a single month. And in 2005, NBC News confirms Haspel took part in an order to destroy videotapes documenting the interrogations. In 2009, former President Obama ordered the secret CIA detention centers to close down.
And Sin, this is the woman that Trump wants to tap as their next head of the CIA. Torture anyone? Yeah. We'll take a quick break here. We'll check out the latest episode of the Green News Report and come back on the other side with Howie Klein. Lots to talk about, including the Democrats eking out a win in Pennsylvania's 18th and the DCCC up to their dirty tricks yet again. All that's on the way. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Thursday, March 15, 2018.
Look, I think the science needs to continue to develop.
The U.S. may soon have its first ever climate science-denying Secretary of State.
Climate change is accelerating catastrophic water events at an unprecedented rate.
World leaders sound the alarm over global water scarcity crisis. Black lung disease surges back in coal country. Toymaker Lego goes greener with plant-based plastics. Plus,
the $320 million ice wall was built underground to keep water at bay. The barrier is failing.
7 years after the meltdown, Japan struggles to contain Fukushima's radioactive wastewater.
All of those failures and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
With respect to climate change, I've read countless studies.
Really? Really, Mike Pompeo? You've read countless climate change studies? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, my world is turned upside down because I'm actually sad that the former CEO of ExxonMobil will no longer be our Secretary of State.
Yep, indeed. This week, President Trump fired U.S. Secretary of State and, as you mentioned, former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson and nominated current CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace him. And that spells bad news for what is left of U.S. climate policy. While Tillerson did much to undermine the State Department and U.S. climate action, at least he accepted climate science and he advocated for the U.S. to stay in the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. But Pompeo supports Trump's decision to withdraw from the global accord. And if Pompeo's nomination is confirmed by the U.S. Senate, he would be the first climate change-denying Secretary of State.
And make no mistake about it. This guy is really a climate science denier.
Yep. In a 2013 appearance on C-SPAN, back when he was a Kansas congressman, Pompeo denied the global consensus among climate scientists on dangerous climate change.
Look, I think the science needs to continue to develop. I'm happy to continue to look at it. There are scientists that think lots of different things about climate change. There's some who think we're warming. There's some who think we're cooling. There's some who think that
no,
the last 16 years have shown a pretty stable climate environment.
No, they don't.
Okay, that's classic climate denierism right there. This is Mike Pompeo. He was from Kansas, Koch brothers country, a former Tea Party congressman. Do you suppose that his climate denialism has anything to do with the fact that he wouldn't be there but for the Koch brothers?
It seems pretty darn likely. And as if to underscore the importance of the international impacts of climate change, a new joint report released on Wednesday from the World Bank and the United Nations warns that the world faces a looming global water crisis. Because global warming is altering rainfall patterns around the world, the report projects that by 2030, more than 700 million people will face intense water scarcity, potentially triggering conflicts over water resources, especially in volatile regions.
Oh, I'm sure Mike Pompeo has read that report, and he's seen the ones that contradict it, and so he's going to do nothing about it.
Yeah, he's not going to help negotiate or deal with his international security issue as Secretary of State.
As Secretary of State.
Here in the U.S., federal scientists say black lung disease has surged again in coal country. Black lung is a terminal lung disease that afflicts coal miners who breathe in coal dust. It had been in decline for years, but in a survey of medical records in Appalachian states, the scientists discovered the largest cluster of advanced black lung disease ever recorded. The scientists say they were surprised to see the advanced black lung disease even in young miners in their 30s and 40s. The researchers suggest that as Appalachia's coal deposits become depleted, miners are being exposed to more fine particle silica dust found in deeper coal seams.
Oh, no, you mean
clean, beautiful coal.
Sadly, no. Meanwhile, in Japan, this week marked the 7th anniversary of the historic earthquake and tsunami disaster that caused the meltdown of 3 nuclear reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Plant owner TEPCO announced this week that a $320 million underground ice wall is failing to stop groundwater from seeping into the plant, and that's preventing the company from removing melted radioactive fuel at the site. And it could undermine the entire decommissioning process for the plant, already projected to take 30 to 40 years. But there is a bit of good news. The maker of famous Lego toys is going greener. The Danish toy maker will phase in its first ever Lego bricks made entirely from plant-based material, bioplastic made from Brazilian sugarcane. Starting this year, they'll add the new pieces with the goal of transitioning to 100% sustainably sourced plant materials for all of its building bricks. It is still a type of plastic, but switching from oil-based to plant-based plastics will cut Lego's carbon footprint by about 70%.
Well, we will take whatever we can get at this point. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Not only is Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com, he's also of the Blue America Pack, and he joins us each Thursday. Hello, Howie.
Hi. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Pretty good as well. Just was talking my head off a few minutes ago, so I'm a little hoarse.
Ah, well, maybe you were celebrating what went on in Pennsylvania's 18th district. That was a squeaker, huh?
Well, you could look at it as a squeaker if you care, which I don't, about who won it. Ultimately,
right.
It doesn't matter to me that Connor Lamb, a blue dog, is going to be in Congress now for, you know, a few months.
Right.
I don't. So I wasn't really, what I was cared about in that race was not a squeaker, and that was the swing from what Trump won the district by to what Lamb got. It didn't matter to me that Lamb won by 600 votes. I could care less. Mm-hmm. I expect him to go into Congress and be terrible, like just the same way that Doug Jones is terrible as a senator from
right.
Alabama.
Right.
But you needed Doug Jones for the, you know, because you can pick off a couple of Republicans and maybe one or two good things can pass because of him. I don't know that that's going to happen, but it might. But in the case of Conor Lamb, he's never going to help the Democrats with anything ever. And there are just too many Republicans. So it really didn't ultimately matter except as a feel-good thing that he won the seat. What mattered is that the Republicans lost 19 points in that district. That's a big deal.
It's incredible.
Because if that happens nationally in November, they're going to also lose over 100 seats in the House. That's what the big deal is.
Wow. That was a huge swing.
They're not celebrating that, no.
But the swing, the 20-point yes. swing, which that is a big deal.
Yes, very big deal. And the Republicans know it. I predicted that by June there'll be 20 more Republicans, which is an awesomely large number, that who decide to retire, one of whom is very possible to be Paul Ryan.
Yeah, we're still waiting to hear. He's not talked at all about his re-election, has he?
a little bit, but not much. He has people who do that for him, but, you know, he has said that, you know, his son, one of his sons is his last year living in the house, and he feels like he needs to be with him for the last year. So he is setting it up for himself to get out. There's also some talk that Trump is going to offer him a cabinet position at a certain point. Remember, the last day that he has to make this decision, I think he's already made the decision, but the last day for him to announce the decision is June 1st.
Ah.
Because the day that he has to, you know, Wisconsin has a law. On June 1st, you have to either declare or you're not on the ballot. So my guess is that he's already told the Republican who he wants to run that to get ready, and that on June 1st he'll pull the trigger. Trump didn't want him to pull the trigger before that because it could trigger an exodus of Republican congressmen, which I think it will when it happens.
Did the Republican Party spend so much money on Rick Saccone? I mean, reports are it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million for a seat that as
no,
you...
it was more than $10
million.
Oh, my God. It was $10 million as of a week ago, and then they doubled down on their on their spending in the last week. So my guess is that in the end, we won't find out for another few weeks, but in the end, I bet it'll be more like $12 million.
Wow. And that's for a seat that, as you point out, won't even be there after November because of redistricting.
Exactly. It was really to save face for the party and to, you know, keep their members calm and to keep their members from, you know, trying to disassociate themselves with Trump. If you go to my blog today, I think it's the top story. It's either the top or the second story. I ran the ads.
Uh-huh.
Since Trump is running around now saying how Conor Lamb ran as a Trumpist, I wanted to show how the Republicans attacked Conor Lamb. And so I have three of their TV ads that they spent millions of dollars on running, which were all basically Pelosi had a little lamb.
Right.
So they're worth looking at for someone who wants to see the way Republicans are ran this race and the way that, by the way, they plan to run all the other congressional races. I mean, like the DCCC, the NRCC doesn't learn anything. So they will run, Nancy had a little lamb in every district in the country, you know, changing, the word lamb. But that's all they know how to do. So
right.
It didn't work at all. It turned out that Trump and Ryan were far more toxic than Nancy, even in a district that was created to elect Republicans. That district, if you follow the lines of that district closely, as the Supreme Court did, you will see that that district was created to elect Republicans. They leave, mm-hmm. they go in and out around Democratic neighborhoods to leave them out. They, you know, there's like little things jutting out of the district to capture Republican neighborhoods. It's amazing how that district was drawn. It was drawn so that a Democrat could not, under any circumstances, win. But they didn't count on Donald Trump. Democrats never win, ever, an R plus 11 district. It's
right.
impossible. Anyone will tell you no Democrat will ever win an R plus 11 district. Well, we just did with a very, very mediocre Democratic candidate, also a very mediocre Republican candidate. This election was about one thing and one thing only, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
People went into the polls either liking Trump or not liking Trump. And that the result was that they lost the district.
And Howie Klein, you really think this portends well for November? This for the big blue wave that many of us hope are coming. You think this is a good indication that that's the case?
I do. My feeling is that it could change, mm-hmm. but the likelihood of it changing for the worse for Republicans is much greater than it changing for the better for Republicans. In other words. Like the way I'm doing, okay, let me start a little bit differently. Most of the professional prognosticators are now saying, okay, the Democrats are going to win, all things being equal, the Democrats are going to win all the R plus one, R plus two, and R plus three districts. That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that Democrats can win up to R plus 10. Democrats never win anything above an R plus five. I'm saying in this kind of a political atmosphere with Trump out there and with the way the Republican Congress is behaving, it can go as high as an R plus 10. Conor Lamb just won an R plus 11. I mean,
right.
it's like insane. I mean, no one can believe this happened. I mean, everyone is trying to come up with how it could have happened. And there's only one answer, and that answer is Trump. Trump, and only Trump, made this election a referendum on himself. You know, Conor Lamb didn't say anything negative about Trump. He did not campaign against Trump. He did not want to do that. But Trump butted in and made this into a Trump referendum. Conor Lamb never would have done that. He had no intention of it, and he didn't do it.
And he
wanted to. A strictly local election, him versus Saccone. But neither he nor Saccone is anything. They're nothing. They're two nothing candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump made himself the issue. He did it. And that ended Saccone's career. I mean, the Republicans hate Saccone now. They consider him, you know, a loser. Trump has been saying horrible things about him to people. And he's not going to run for anything again, I don't think. I mean, he was in the state legislature, and I don't think he's going to have a career.
Right.
I feel bad for the guy. I mean, they're talking about his porn mustache.
Right.
I mean, what kind of a joke is that? I wrote about this morning. The most valuable brand in the entire country. So the person running for Congress who has the literally the most valuable brand. Now, this is off the record, but he raised $5.2 million already.
Wow.
Those numbers aren't reported yet. You know, they get reported at the end of the quarter. And that's Randy Bryce, whose name is Iron Stash.
Right.
It's about his mustache.
That's right.
I spent time with him this weekend, and I'll tell you something. The mustache didn't stop tons of women coming up to him and asking him for pictures,
uh-huh.
for selfies.
Wow.
We went into a restaurant, a random Italian restaurant in L.A., and every person who works in the restaurant came up to say something to Randy, including
wow.
waiters who said that they had donated money to him.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's not like, you know, I set something up with a restaurant that I'm friendly with. This was a mafia restaurant, basically. And we just walked in, and these guys who looked like Luca Brasi were coming over and telling Randy how much they loved him. And the next day, we went to a fundraiser in Santa Monica where every woman and it was a fundraiser for Sam Jamal, and no one knew that we were coming. Sam Jamal didn't even know we were coming. And we walk in, and almost every woman in the place wanted a selfie with Randy.
Well, he's the real deal, and it comes through. It's got nothing to do with
a
mustache.
He's the real deal.
Exactly. And so,
unlike Lamb, unlike Saccone, mm-hmm. Randy knows how to talk to people. Randy's one of them. They're not. I mean, I had a labor, a union president, a local union president, write a guest post for me a couple of weeks ago, and he said that although the union guys were going to vote for Lamb, they all hated him. No one liked him. That he described to me, they had just had a labor meeting the day before or 2 days before, and Lamb came and addressed them, and they all felt he was looking down on them. They didn't like the way he spoke. They have their own little sort of speech in Pittsburgh area, like I think it's called Yowzer or something like that. And he didn't speak it. Saccone did, and Lamb didn't. And he was, Saccone wears the same kind of like sort of inexpensive sweaters that they wear. And Lamb was always in a suit and tie, and none of them related to him. And when he left the meeting, they all burst out laughing. And the labor guy said that none of the guys in my union like Lamb, and they're all going to vote for him because they were voting against Trump, not for Lamb.
Wow. Well, and it's still not official, but as you said, it doesn't really matter so much who won that race. The what matters is that 20-point difference and just the trends. And again, this is not a seat that's going to be there for the long run. It's a temporary placeholder.
It's a feel-good thing for Democrats and a feel-bad thing for Republicans,
exactly.
Who aren't going to be looking at the swing. They're just saying who won, who lost, and it doesn't go beyond that. So for the Democratic Party, it's a big deal. And for the Republican Party, it's a big deal that Conor Lamb won. I mean, Trump is running around. On Wednesday, someone got a tape of his. He had a private fundraiser for the Republican kook who's running in Missouri. And at that fundraiser, he said that Lamb liked him.
Yep.
And Lamb was running on his issues.
Right.
That's what Trump
said. Which couldn't be any further from the truth, but that's nothing different, nothing unusual for Trump, who makes shit up on an hourly basis. Just to
and
things.
It's funny that you just said that phrase. Did you know that he used that phrase himself?
Make shit up?
He said he bragged to Republicans that he said literally, I make shit up.
Wow.
Just what you just said. You said he makes shit up?
He does.
He said, I make shit up.
Wow.
That's our president.
Oh, I'm so proud. So... Last week, Howie, we were talking about what the DCCC did to Laura Moser in Texas, and it may have backfired on them because she's now in the runoff to be the nominee for her district. They're doing it again in a Denver suburb to another progressive.
They're doing two. First of all, they're redoubling their efforts to destroy Laura Moser in Texas. So they're now they've decided to. They're doing just what Karl Rove and Lee Atwater used to do. They find what's someone's strength, mm-hmm. and they turn that strength into a weakness. So like what they did to Kerry when he ran for president. John Kerry, was a someone who went to Vietnam. George Bush was someone who avoided going to Vietnam. So they turned that around and they made it seem like it was Bush who was the great military hero and Kerry was the coward. I mean, that they spent millions of dollars doing that, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what when people say you're using the Karl Rove, Lee Atwater playbook, that's what they're talking about.
Right.
And that's what the DCCC is doing to Laura right now. They're taking the progressive in this race, and they have turned her in their filthy, vile, vicious propaganda into a racist. She happens to be married to a person of color, by the way.
Wow.
She's not going to say that, but they're calling her a racist. They've talked the Black Lives Matter people into thinking that she's a racist.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible what they're doing to this woman. But like you asked me, yes, there's another the DCCC does this all the time. This is how they run their show. The operation this kind of operation started in 2005. In 2006, it was really full-blown when Rahm Emanuel and Steny Hoyer decided they should pick the nominees, not the primary voters. And they started using all these tactics to do that, and they're still doing it at the DCCC. And there are people who are angry about it. You know, Bernie's flipping out over it. Many members of Congress don't like it, and they don't care. They keep doing it anyway. They do not care. They're still doing it, and they're doing it all over the country. And today, Blue America endorsed a guy in the suburbs of Denver named Levi Tillerson. So Levi Tillerson,
Tillerman,
interesting guy. Sorry,
Tillerman.
Yeah, well, I said Tillerson. I'm thinking of the Secretary of State. Yeah, Tillerman.
Tillerman.
So he's an interesting guy. I believe he's a Mormon. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he's a Mormon. I think his brother told me he's a Mormon. But he's the grandson of Tom Lantos. So do you remember Lantos at all?
Yeah.
He was the Bay Area, very, very liberal congressman.
Okay.
Who is, you know, very, very much Jewish. So he was like liberal on domestic issues and a bit of a hawk when it came to international things. He's a little bit of a Zionist, in fact. But that's Lantos. I mean, the Tillerman isn't anything like that. But so here he had a Jewish grandfather, and he's a Mormon. It's kind of. I have to ask him about that. I never did. But we've been sort of vetting him for the last few months, and I've gotten to know him, but didn't get into his personal religious stuff. But in any case, he's a really good progressive. The DCCC is running. They couldn't have made up a more horrible candidate if they wanted to make him up. This is a guy who's an attorney who represents fracking companies, payday lenders, every kind of horrible kind of client that we as progressives despise. And he's just a typical Republican wing of the Democratic Party kind of guy. And the DCCC is fighting tooth and nail to undermine and undercut Levi Tillerman. And they are doing everything they can to do that. And, you know, from spreading rumors about him to trying to force him out, Steny Hoyer personally went to Denver to have a meeting with him and, you know, told him he has to get out of the race. I mean, it's unbelievable the kinds of things that the DCCC does. But, they did it to Laura. It backfired in their face. So you think maybe they would stop? No, they're doing it more now. They learn nothing. They absolutely are incapable of learning anything. They think they're smarter than anybody else, and they can get away with this stuff.
When is that Denver primary?
It's the suburbs of Denver. Uh-huh. It's like it's sort of the district kind of wraps around Denver. So there's no piece of the district that's actually in Denver itself. You know, the city, if you're looking for a city in that district, it's actually Aurora, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know offhand what the date is, but I'm going to tell you in 1 second. So Colorado is June 26th.
Okay, so there's a little time there, more time for them to push their bad candidate and try to malign the good one.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what they're doing. Where, like I said, we just formally endorsed Levi, and we sent out a letter to all of our members today. And asking people to chip in to his race.
Right.
Usually we do that on Sundays, but I decided to just do it on a Thursday. We've made this guy wait so long that I felt like I wanted to do something different for him.
So that's Colorado's 6th district. Levi
yes.
Tillerman and the DCCC stooge guy is Jason Crow.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a Republican in that seat now. Is this a Republican district? What does the district look like? Is this one likely to be a pickup for the Democrats?
Yes. This is a D plus two district.
Wow.
So this is a district that should have gone to the Democrats long ago. Obama won the district. Hillary won the district. This is definitely a Democratic district. But the DCCC has been so lame for so long that they just keep losing. Some pretty good, decent Democrats have run in this district before, and the DCCC has backstabbed them and done everything. It's like they would rather have a Republican than have a progressive Democrat.
Amazing.
They just don't want progressive Democrats in. And one of the reasons for that is because they want to make sure that the next speaker, the next leader of the Democratic Party and the Speaker of the House is a conservative Democrat. They are petrified that it could be a progressive. And
but we've talked
they're very,
about
very
this.
Worried about that.
Right now they have
Joe Crowley lined up to be the next Democratic speaker.
Ugh.
He's literally the most corrupt man in the whole of all Democrats, the most corrupt man in Congress. He is the go-between for Wall Street. So here in the Senate, Wall Street will have Chuck Schumer, who they've given more money to than anyone who hasn't run for president in history. Double what they've given to Ryan, more than double what they've given to McConnell. Chuck Schumer is their guy, and he's the Democrat who is the highest-ranking Democrat in the Senate. And now they're about to put in Joe Crowley, who is the same thing. He's the guy, when new Democrats come to Congress, he says, hey, come with me, I'm going to introduce you to some people. And he introduces them to all the banksters, and he explains to them how it works, how they get their bribe money. The people who don't want to take bribes from Wall Street, he gets the money for them and gives it to them. So it's like a gift from him instead of coming from a lobbyist or a bankster. He's as bad as they come, and he's who the Democrats want to put in to replace Nancy.
What?
And they're afraid if progressives get elected, they're not going to vote. They're not going to vote for Crowley.
Who would they vote for, though? What progressive is up there in leadership that could potentially take over as speaker?
Well, it depends what you mean by potentially. They can elect anybody in the world, first of all. You don't even have to be a member of Congress,
true,
although that's never happened. But they can elect anybody.
Right.
But, of course, Democrats have these rules that unless you're, you know, very, very old and ancient and corrupt, they don't want you to rise in the leadership. I say, why not get somebody inspiring?
Yes.
Why not get someone who's ancient monster, which is all they want to ever do is have ancient monsters. So how about someone like Pramila Jayapal? How about someone like Ro Khanna? How about someone like Ted Lieu? How about, you know, there are, you know, Mark Pocan. There are, how about Randy Bryce?
Yep.
He's going to be a member of Congress by the time they have to decide. I mean, and there's nothing that says you cannot have a freshman, you cannot have a sophomore, you cannot have a junior. I just described freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. And there's nothing that says you can't have them.
Right.
It's like there's nothing that says you have to have somebody who is going to launder money from Wall Street into the caucus. There's no rule about that. I mean, it's time for them to stand up on their hind legs and say we're not going by these old rules of electing geriatrics. I mean, they're describing Joe Crowley as this, you know, young
guy, right?
Young guy. He's 56 years old.
Right.
I don't know that he's a young. I mean, he might be a young guy compared to people in their 80s.
Yep.
But how about someone who actually is a young guy?
That would be a nice change.
Sorry?
That would be a nice change of pace.
It would be, but you know, I mean, the Republican leadership is 20 years younger than the Democratic leadership.
Yeah.
What the hell? What the hell? Half the country is a millennial or below, and the Democrats are ancient. And they don't even win the senior vote. The Republicans win the senior vote anyway. So, yes, there are lots of good candidates. I was just talking to the chief, Ted Lieu's chief of staff, and saying, can we get him to run? And he said, I don't know. I wish he would, too. But he doesn't know that Ted is going to do that. And I'm sure Ted I'm sure Ted would love it if it was by, you know, if everybody like said Ted Lieu, I'm sure he'd be delighted, but I can't see him pushing himself forward at this point because everyone is under the impression that it's got to be, you know, someone who's been around forever and who's, you know, but people who have been around forever get corrupted. That's the problem. You know, once you're in Congress, you wind up, you know, compromising on this and compromising on that. And suddenly you realize, oh, my God, I'm what I've always been talking out against.
Yeah, but that depends on the person. I mean, that's not going to be Ted Lieu. That's not going to be Mark Pocan or Pramila Jayapal or any of those names that you just mentioned, regardless of how long they're in there.
Yes, well, I agree.
Howie Klein.
But it is true of of Joe Crowley. I mean, yeah. Joe Crowley, aside from the Wall Street thing, he was the head of the New Dems, so basically the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. And he's never, he doesn't even know how to run a race because he's never had to. The guy who is, he's the county Democratic machine, county boss of Queens in New York. And he was just given the seat, and he's never run. He's never had to run an election, ever. In his whole career, he never had an election.
It's so discouraging, and it doubly sucks because it's on the heels of really encouraging news dealing with what happened in Pennsylvania on Tuesday night. That it looks good for the Democrats. It just sucks that leadership it sucks so hard to not be very articulate about it. Howie Klein, we are out of time. As always, thank you for joining us each Thursday. It's very insightful, and I always appreciate it.
Great to talk to you as well, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Take care. Bye-bye. Howie Wonderful. Klein of DownWithTyranny.com and the Blue America PAC. Don't forget, the next primary is this coming Tuesday. It's in Illinois, and Dan Lipinski is the incumbent DCCC candidate. There's a much better candidate running against him named Marie Newman.